Who are you?
I am an architect of cozy.
I was going to ask you about that. Keep going. Yeah.
I build worlds that people can soften into, that they're places where people feel held, safe, relaxed, and probably where they will fall asleep.
Yeah. I love it. Like, I have so many, and I'm sure everyone listening or watching, I have so many questions just on that line. Like, I mean, I guess I'll start with, when did you realize that you are an architect of cozy?
One of my friends actually dubbed me that within like the first couple months of the podcast starting, which was 8 years ago now. And she just texted it to me. She was like, I just figured out what you're doing. You are an architect of cozy. And I was like, so flattered. You know, I was like, but it is such a lovely way to describe what I was doing. You know, I realized a long time ago that if people aren't sleeping or if they aren't relaxing, it's often because they don't feel safe. There's a million factors, but a big one for a lot of people is just a feeling of safety. And so I really felt from the beginning that my work was going to have to be to build out world spaces, scenes, environments where safety was so embedded into the fabric that you felt it as soon as you stepped in. And for me, coziness is the same thing as that. It's that sort of snugness, secureness, and there's also a layer of enjoyment on top. We need that.
Of course, of course. And where did this all come from? I mean, I know that, you know, and I can't trust everything I read on the internet, but I mean, I think roughly you know, you were teaching yoga and meditation mm-hmm. for a couple decades and so forth. But like, how did all of this stuff transpire in getting you to a place where, you know, this is where it started, I think where it started, but just, you're obviously working on many other projects as someone running a media company, I guess is what you can say at this point. But, you know, getting to the point where you have one of the largest sleep podcasts in the world. Like, it's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. And it's one of those journeys that when you like turn and look backwards, you realize that like a bunch of choices you made along the way pointed to exactly where you are right now. You didn't know it at the time, but it built me into who I needed to be to do this work. So you're right that I spent 20 years full-time yoga teaching and, you know, spending just a lot of hours day in and day out noticing how my voice could affect people, my word choice, the presence I brought to a space, just noticing those cues of relaxation in people and figuring out over and over again for a lot of different kinds of people how I was going to help them get there. And then another big part of the story is that I have always been able to sleep. And this is because since I was 3 or 4 years old, I've always told myself bedtime stories. It was just something I did intuitively as a little kid with a big imagination. And because of that, I've always been able to sleep. You know, I am friends with some other sleep podcasters sort of behind the scenes. We're buddies. And I'm always the odd woman out. Everybody else usually, they're like, oh, I do this because I've never been a good sleeper. And I was like, oh, no, I sleep like it's my job. 8 hours, show up on time, don't take breaks. You know?
Yeah, so, I love that.
So I feel like those things came together, you know, like this intuitive practice I started as a kid, plus 20 years of just work and understanding and sort of research and development coming together in order to make me the person who could create this experience.
Yeah. You know what that reminds me of? So I've been interviewing with technology, of course, but I've been interviewing Yogananda.
Yeah.
And I remember asking him a question at one point around like, tell me a little bit more about like, what was it like before you came to the US and wrote, you know, this book, Autobiography of a Yoga, that yogi that everyone knows about and so forth. And like kind of what were those struggle points in that between world, which is the topic of the next book, as you know. And he said, he's like, you know, I had to envision like when I was in a class where there was 25 or 30 people there that like, even at that point, I knew that, you know, I was going to be bringing this kind of work to more and more people, but I had to treat those moments, like that moment of training, essentially with the smaller classes as if there's 30,000 people there. And I feel like there's like a similarity to your story from, you know, I don't know how what size those classes were, but to like what 200 million kind of people listening to
yes.
a sleep podcast and counting. It's
yeah, that is so yeah. true. And that was my experience. You know, I owned a yoga studio in a small town where there had never been a yoga studio before. So, you know, it was a lot of people's first experience, and I was with them for 20 years. I had students that, you know, I watched them through all, move through all these seasons of their life with them through difficult moments and through celebrations, and just kind of to be there with them and hold space with them. And it was also a very diverse group of people. And so I feel like investing that time to really be with people, to notice what helped them and what didn't, that is what made me able to then expand so exponentially to speak to so many more people all over the world.
Yeah. When did you first realize or accept maybe that you're a writer?
Oh gosh.
Are you still on that journey?
No, I'm definitely, I own it now, but okay. It did take a long time. I was joking with my friend Nate the other day about how, I don't know if you've seen that meme where it says, if nobody can tell you you're doing it wrong, if they don't know what you're doing. And I feel like that's kind of how I backed into being a writer. I was like, I'm going to build a genre that doesn't exist, and then no one can tell me I'm not doing it right.
Yes, exactly.
So because when I started, there was one other sleep podcast, and it wasn't fiction based. So I was really sort of laying the groundwork for what I was going to call healing fiction, or, you know, grown up bedtime stories. And so I feel like that was like a little bit of a scaredy pants way of putting my toe in the water of writing. I find that what really helped me shift into just owning that I am a writer is showing up and doing it day after day after day. There was no way to doubt it anymore. I had the evidence in front of me that I can do this, and I do this. But that probably took a good year or so for, you know, I would show up to a writing session and go, what if I can't do it this time? What if I don't know how this works anymore?
What was the first one like? Like, how did you even start?
Yeah, I had been telling myself a bedtime story for a long time that is basically my first episode called A Block from Home, where I would just really slowly walk a block to my house. It would be raining. And you know, that feeling of like coming home and turning the lock on your door and thinking, I don't have to go back out there, and I'm safe in here. And then just like pulling the curtains and getting deeper into the house. And I had been telling myself that bedtime story for years, and it would put me out within 30 seconds. So, you know, in some ways I felt like, okay, I already know this. I just have to transcribe it. And there were a few stories in that first season that came directly from my own experience. And then I remember there was a story that I wrote probably in season three or something, which my seasons were kind of short, so it wasn't that far into it, but I had a moment where I realized I was writing in a different style and that I was letting myself do it. Like, I had really strong guidelines around how I was going to write and what it was going to be like. And then I was like, or what if, you know, and it was a little bit more lyrical and a little bit more magical. And I was like, oop, like I just took a step.
Yeah.
And that felt like a moment where I was like, okay, like, you figured out how to build a widget, and you built it. And now you get to turn it, twist it, try to make something else. And those were like moments as a writer that I was like, oh, I'm doing something different now. That's exciting.
Yeah. And like present day, what's a day in a life, you know, for Catherine kind of thing? Like, what's the setup? And I guess that, like, the other question, just so I don't forget, that comes to mind is just, you know, as someone that has written books as well, like, I think there's a difference between you have an idea and a story and so forth, and you're working on this like one big project and you kind of keep that going, and you're doing that right now as well. But like, it, the consistency of the volume of stories, like, how do you do it?
Whose idea was this?
Exactly.
I know. And, you know, I have to be pretty disciplined with like my schedule and stuff, because I have to schedule in some goofing around, because I have to also have some downtime to goof around just so that I can focus later. So when I think about a day in my life, there's still some pockets of laying on the floor and listening to music and walking my dog and stuff like that. But I plan every week. Usually on Friday, I go to the next week and I write every day what I'm going to be working on, so that like I am usually a month ahead. So today is the 25th. I will complete July today. So we're actually almost already more than a month ahead right now. And that is like a huge moment. And I go, wait a minute, they're going to come out. There's going to be another month after that. So, and then, you know, I work in writing sprints and that works really well for me. So yeah, I have like a, I have a kitchen timer on my, desk and I set it to 25 minutes. And for 25 minutes, I don't futz with my phone. I don't do anything else. I don't answer emails. I just write. And then when it goes off, I get up, I walk around, I'll change the laundry or, you know, mess around for a few minutes. And then probably 10 minutes later, I'm back down and I'm writing again. And so there's a good block of the morning and a good block of the afternoon that that's all I'm doing.
Okay.
So that keeps me up and going. And then I also lead like a weekly writers group. And we really, it's just a shared space. We come together online. I give people a prompt. We write to the prompt for 5 minutes. And then we just turn off our mics and write our own stuff for the rest of the hour. But that is a standing appointment I never miss. And I get so much done in that hour. So sometimes just having a buddy there watching over you can make a big difference. But yeah, I mean, I'm working on this pitch right now for this really big project. And I had this moment where I thought, oh my God, what if I sell this? When on earth would I write this?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll worry about that when I sell it.
Totally. How do you capture your ideas? Like, I know you've got a pretty diligent schedule and you plan and so forth, but is there, like, what does that look like? I mean, is it you sit down and you already have a list of ideas that have been captured and be like, okay, I'm going to go here? Or what does that look like?
I definitely have like a running list. And this is another place where I feel like yoga taught me to do this. I spent so much time training myself to be present moment to moment and to notice small things that, you know, and in the course of a day, I'm going to come up with 4 or 5 ideas for another story just based on some small moment that I am witness to. And that creates like a little spark of awe or wonder in me. And then I think I can build a story around that. So I have a list in my phone that you can just scroll and scroll and scroll and never get to the end of. So often if I don't already sort of know where I'm going, I'll spend some time with that list and just shoot some ideas around. And then sit down and start to write. And often it'll be the place too where then I've gotten to the end of it and I never got that detail into it. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll try that next week. But but then also because now after 8 years, because all the stories take place in the same like overlapping universe, it's all in the same neighborhood, that also gives me a way to go back and go, well, I haven't heard from these people in a while. I haven't revisited this storyline. So now I can go back to the inn or let's go back to the bakery. Let's see how folks are doing over there. So when I feel sort of, you know, like my cup doth no longer runneth over, I will go back to some of those wells and dip into them.
I love that. I love that. Thank you for entertaining all the detailed. I mean, you can tell that I'm always searching. And I think a lot of the listeners of this show are like this as well. Like just looking, we're not looking for prescriptions. We're looking for ideas on how people create and work and be like, oh, that's really cool. I mean, I could borrow that one and work it into the routine and so forth. I'd love to ask you a little bit more about, I mean, there are the sleep stories, of course, which the, you know, typically the goal is to help people fall asleep. And like you said, help people feel more safe and so forth. And, but also like I'm, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the current audiobook, which is out, when are we are releasing this on a Sunday. It's out in 2 days for everyone listening. Congrats, by the way, on the streets where you live. I mean, I've been listening to this and I'm not listening to it before I go to bed. I'm listening to it as just like a mental break. Mm-hmm. And just, I don't think I've ever heard something written in this way. And like, you know, and I'm sure this is not the first time you've heard this, but there's no big climaxes to these. Like, they're just interesting stories. And, but that like put your mind in this beautiful imaginative state of like, yeah, I was in the bakery with that character, and it's so cool. Anyway, I have a lot of questions on that, and plus your voice actors and so forth, but I even forget my question. I think I wanted to ask you, like, what, when it comes to the themes and the topics, or why, you know, you're writing, especially this, the latest audiobook, like, what's behind that for you?
Yeah. Well, first I wanted to say just thank you for those really kind words about my book. My memory is so bad that when I listen to it, I'm like, oh my God, did I write this? And I had a moment the other day where I listened to it and I just started crying because I felt so, so content and proud of, you know, of how lovely it is. I really want to credit the voice actors for that too, because I feel like they took my work and elevated it to this thing that is just beyond what I could have imagined. But, you know, I have been using the term healing fiction for a while, and I actually just heard this term a little while ago. There's a genre sometimes called Japanese healing fiction, and this is sort of a bigger genre happening in Japan and in Korea, where people are writing books sort of specifically designed to put you in this mindset where you feel calm and centered and focused on things that are important and that feel good. And they're not full of, you know, big character arcs or big plots. They're sort of wandering. That's sometimes how I've described it too. It's wandering fiction. It's just sort of touches this and then it goes over there. And in some ways, that's a lot of what our daily life is. You're thinking about this and then you have this experience. And so it's just sort of narrating that. But in this world where people are safe, there's access, there's just kindness is commonplace. It is the go-to response of everyone around you. And I sometimes think I'm kind of trying to write that into existence, to offer an example of what a community could be like if that was the way we lived with each other. And sometimes I think of it sort of like Schitt's Creek, when I watched Schitt's Creek and I realized, oh, he's writing a world where there's just no homophobia. There just isn't. And they don't even have to point at it. It's just, what if there wasn't? This is what that would look like. And I, you know, and it, I felt like that gave me permission. Just seeing another artist do sometimes give you permission to go, well, what if I just wrote a world that was like this? Everybody had the access to the things they needed. And, you know, who would you be if you weren't struggling for this or protecting for that? So I feel like the joy of the stories really just lets you spend time in that world yourself. And I feel like that's healing as well as, I hope, entertaining.
Well, it's so needed. I mean, you know, the work that I do in the mental fitness world and working with primarily corporate teams and so forth. And so I just see the data and I see the energy and where people's minds are at, and people are so overwhelmed and stressed and so forth. And I mean, I'm sure, you know, you fall victim to this as well as I do. I mean, it's easy to get caught up on the autopilot of what's happening in the world. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, wait a second. And thankfully we've got a lot of tools and like what you're creating is super helpful, but a lot of people just don't have that. So it's just even taking a few minutes to have a break, you know, from that world and reset and come back refreshed. It almost should be prescribed. I mean, like, that is.
I totally agree. Needed. And I think, you know, for people who are going through that kind of burnout, who might have a resistance to sort of traditional mindfulness practice, who go, you know, I don't want to meditate, or I don't feel like, don't be prescriptive with me about doing X, Y, and Z. I feel like this is a sneaky way to do that.
Totally.
I always feel like I'm like hiding the vegetables in the pasta sauce here and go, here you go, kids. because instead of lecturing you about why it's useful to be present, I just made you present. You actually didn't have to do any work. You were listening, you got wound into the sensory details, and you were just in that moment. And that's healing. So I feel like for a lot of people, hopefully, it will plant these little seeds of, oh, you know, awareness, gentleness, gratitude, that kind of stuff. And that's what I hear from my listeners, you know, which I'm so grateful for. They say, I slept great tonight, but the next day, I even thought about this and this that I heard in the story, and it made me just be a little softer with myself.
For sure. Yes, win. For sure. Huge win.
Yeah.
You know what's coming to mind? I mean, this is something I would love to write at one point or not that you have any spare time to offer up, and maybe this is something at one point, but it would be really cool to have, because I see this with running, bringing people through mental fitness flows and practices, that your current work in terms of just getting people in a safe place, in a relaxed state, and, you know, refreshed and calm. And then imagine if they brought in the next story, which is an imaginative, like, imagine if, and it's almost like you're creating your next chapter for yourself, you know, and like imagining possibility and all of that, because it's, so many people want to do that, but it's hard to project yourself into like creating that world for yourself when you're in this like ultra stressed, overwhelmed state.
For sure.
So you need the first part first, essentially.
You really do. Yeah. Right? I've never bought into like the tortured artist thing, you know, where you have to be like twisted up in knots to make art. If anything, I have to like let my defenses down completely. I myself have to feel so safe because it's a vulnerable thing to make art. So I think that's actually a really wise perspective. Like, I think it would make a great retreat, you know, if you want to do this. We'll get a bunch of people. We'll get them really relaxed and feeling safe, and then we'll help give them the tools to make art. I feel like that would be really therapeutic. Oh, and it's been my experience as the creator of this. A lot of times people will write me and say, hey, if you ever need another writer, I'd really like to join your staff. And quite selfishly, I'm always like, no, thank you. I want to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I like it.
For sure. Speaking of for you and you having practices or rituals or I'll even call them kind of non-negotiables in your life to allow your mind to breathe and surface, you know, I know you have a lot of ideas for stories given your training and presence and so forth, but I guess what practices do you lean on most often as a default? And, you know, when life does get a little bit crazy, what are the things that really help in those stressful or tougher moments?
Yeah. I'm a real big walker. I need to walk to regulate my mind, and I walk almost every day. That's one of my favorite things, is just to get outside, breathe fresh air, get the sun on my face and walk. I do yoga, of course, and a lot of times I just practice by myself with music on and just move my body in any which way and feel sort of the release of that. And sometimes I do stuff like yesterday. I went to like a cold plunge place where I got to hang out in the sauna and do cold plunges and stuff like that. There's no end of me pampering myself. I do like the floats in the salt tanks. Yeah. I do, you know, I get to spend a lot of time on Lake Michigan. I love to swim and, you know, to ride my bike. So probably most of it has to do with me moving through my body to find the regulation. You know, that's where I always feel like I pull the parts of myself back together.
I mean, you call it pampering, but I feel like it's, like, I feel like this should be the standard. I mean, you're probably a perfect example of it's not like you're not producing and doing things.
That's the truth, right?
Like, you have a lot coming out and so forth. And I think it's important to note that probably a lot of that is coming from the fact that, you know, your mind is in a healthy state more days than not. And you're doing these things to do that, right? To make sure you're in that place.
I do prioritize that stuff. You know, you're right. And that's kind of like a joke I make, but I really feel like self-care isn't selfish at all. It is just us taking care of ourselves, and that should be the bare minimum. So, you know, I know it's not something everybody has time for, money for, all that stuff, but all things being equal, if we could.
Well, and there's versions of all of all of what you're
describing.
Sometimes
it is just getting outside and getting some fresh air, or laying on the floor with your legs up the wall, or I've got my chihuahua on the chair with me right now,
amazing.
Putting your hand on your dog and being able to take some deep breaths or take a hot bath. You know, I feel like there's ways to do this for everybody.
Yeah. Well, even for myself, before jumping into this recording room, like, I had about maybe, I don't know, 15 minutes before we logged on together, and my mind immediately said, okay, check the email and let's just catch up on that. And then I was like, I'm going to sit on the back porch and just breathe and enjoy, like, it's warm out. I mean, we're on the East Coast, so we've got to take advantage of when it's nice and warm. And and just like be for half a second so I can come in present for you and let the questions that I've already prepared or thought about with the research allow those things to naturally surface. Like, it's hard for that to happen if I'm coming 2 minutes in before, like thinking of this email that came in or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So just small micro things.
Little things like that. And then if you zoom out bigger too, it just does remind you that the purpose of your life is to live it. It's not to constantly optimize it. It's not to produce nonstop. It is to be lived. So that moment where you're on the porch, whatever it produces for you kind of doesn't matter, because the point of it is just for you to get a chance to be there, to experience these things moment to moment. I think that this is sort of the nature of modern life and capitalism and all that stuff, that it's making us try to figure out what the best choice is to get me the furthest ahead. But of course, we're just silly creatures on a rock in space, you know?
Well said. I love that. I love that. Okay, let's. I'm taking us on tangents all over the place here, but if I come back to on the street where you live and the question that I kind of hinted towards, it's an audiobook only, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would love to know just the process or the thought process you went around or went through. Especially given you just said, you know, like, I want to write all the stories and so forth. Like, why didn't you just read all the stories? Like, what was the thought process of bringing in these incredible, like, you got to share some of these backstories of who are, you know, who's reading the stories. But how did all that come to be? And how'd you do it?
I think because I am such an audio geared person. Like, I remember my first experiences with like audio storytelling. Like, I had a Peter Pan record, the kind where the picture was printed right onto the plastic, and I would listen to that thing over and over again. And then the very first audiobook my dad ever got me from the Flint Public Library was The Wolves of Willoughby Chase. And I listened to it nonstop for the entire summer. He had to go back and recheck it out every 2 weeks for me. I just responded so deeply to audio that I felt like, you know, it was kind of a natural, something I was already using with my podcast. And I love the idea of you being out on a walk in your own town and listening to this and sort of pulling that into the fabric of your own day.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge audiobook user. I process things way better hearing them than reading them. So so for me, that felt like a pretty natural idea. And then, you know, just to, because I'm such an avid audiobook listener, I thought, what if we could get some of these narrators who I love so much? What if they would say my words?
Yeah.
So, you know, people like Mara Wilson, you know, such a lovely voiceover actress and an actress and a writer in her own right. And as me being, you know, Gen X, I was like, well, she means a lot to me in my generation, you know. And there's another voice actor named Cabana Holdbrook Smith, who is an incredible actor. And he's in a lot of wonderful movies like Paddington 2, which is, of course, one of the best movies of all time. but he narrates some series that I listen to and love so much. So when I heard that he had signed on, I was just like, oh my gosh, Cabana, like, this voice I trust so much. I know he does such a great job with his storytelling. I guess that was really the answer, is I knew that I could tell these stories, but I had a thought that a lot of other people could tell them even better, because it does take a village.
Yeah, well said. What's the actual process to get these individuals or these voiceover actors, like, how do you get people to sign on? Like, what do you actually do?
Simon and Schuster, you know, we worked together with, I sort of brought some wish list ideas of people that I thought, and they brought some too, and we just kind of would listen to clips and talk about who the characters were and what we were looking for. And once we kind of had agreed on who we thought they would be, we went out with offers. And, you know, when people said yes, that was great. And sometimes people passed or they were busy, and then we would rethink the process. But really listening to it, I had such a strong emotional reaction the first time I heard it, because I just was astounded by how beautiful it was. So I'm so glad I let other people in on. In fact, the first time I listened to it, I called Simon, my publisher, and I said, "I'm the weakest link here. Somebody else needs to re-record my part, because the these people are amazing.
Syndrome.
And they were like, you're good. Calm down.
Yeah. Yeah. We have tens of hundreds of millions of people to prove that. So was it always in the plan, like when you presented the book concept, that there were going to be other people reading? Like that was part of the proposal?
It was. You know, for a while before we sold it, I thought I might make it as a limited series podcast. And so I had already reached out a little bit behind the scenes to various people that I thought might be interested. People like Natalie Nottis, who is one of my voiceover actors. She narrates a bunch of wonderful audiobooks. And I had reached out to her before this because I could see her for this part. And she had said yes right away. So I was already kind of getting it ready. And then I, you know, had heard from my agent that Simon & Schuster was interested. So I'm really glad because they allowed us to make it even better than I could have made it as a podcast.
Sure. Well, yeah, I was going to ask that question. Like, why not go down that series route? Like, what was it about the, you know, going through, I guess you can say a traditional publisher. I mean, obviously it's audio only, but going through that route, that made it really attractive for you.
Mostly it is, I do really like collaboration. I wanted to have an editor and a publisher to collaborate with. I really enjoy that process. I know it's not for everybody, but I really did.
I felt they
helped me make my work better, you know, and they had insights that I didn't have. You know, there were people that I had envisioned for some of these parts who aren't actors, but they have lovely voices. And they were like, these are great voices, but they're not actors. And we have to tell you that we really need this person to be an actor and stuff like that, that I just couldn't have troubleshoot on my own. So I appreciated their guidance and their help. And I think we made a great project together.
Mm. What's your hope for people that listen to these stories?
Kind of big. First, my hope is that it just feels good. You know, right in the beginning of my podcast, I always say, you know, welcome to Bedtime Stories for Grownups, in which nothing much happens. You feel good. And then you fall asleep. And I feel like the you feeling good is a big, like, central aim of my work, that as you listen, it feels good. You are reminded that even in the world we are living in, there are so many good things. They're happening today. More will happen tomorrow. And we have to sort of hold them up to each other and say, look at this, see this, remember this, so that, you know, we're not just staring into the void all the time. So mostly I hope people will feel good. I hope it will inspire them a little bit to reach out to their neighbors. Sort of the overlying theme of the book is that, you know, a community is built through the connections that we have with one another. And sometimes that is just reaching out to someone in an act of friendship or service, or fun, and bringing that back into your neighborhood and into your community. I do hope that inspires people to do that a bit.
That's what I really love about it. I mean, I live in a small town and it's so, I never thought about what, like, I can't wait to actually walk. Like, I live in a town that, you know, there's a couple main drags kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like, you've got the local, you do have the local bakery and coffee shops and stuff like that. And you get to know the people. And you know, I also lived in Toronto and Montreal and bigger cities in the past as well. And you can have that obviously in like your neighborhood, but especially today's world, I feel like so many people are just kind of closed into their home or their condo or whatever it is. Like, you don't even know the people around your direct, you know, location. And it's just a nice reminder that, oh, wait a second, like that it doesn't have to be like that. And and I think in a world where I think a sense of community is probably a net positive for everyone, given the loneliness challenge we have right now. This book is just a beautiful reminder and I think inspiration to show people what's possible.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I always think back to that. I don't know if you've heard that Swahili word Ubuntu, that means sort of you can't be human all by yourself. Mm. That, you know, our who we are comes out of our collective experience. And I had this moment last night. We're about to take a big left turn. We had to call the fire department last night because our bedroom was full of smoke and we couldn't find the source. And about 9 p.m., the fire trucks are outside and we're holding our dogs on the sidewalk and freaking out. And the speed with which my neighbors came to help us just felt like the softest, kindest thing in the world. And, you know, everybody's fine. my house plant ignited itself. Everyone be careful with peat moss.
What?
Yes.
Tell us more.
There was peat moss in a pot and it was sitting in front of the window and the sun, like, I guess that.
No way.
Yes. And it didn't go into flames. It just smoldered and smoked. But we couldn't find the source of it. And so everyone watch out with your house plants.
Yeah. Well, that's terrifying.
It was scary. But, you know, I was so comforted just that my neighbors just came right out and said, do you want to come in here? Bring your dogs. What do you want? What do you need? You know, that willingness to be there for each other in an immediate sort of way. I feel like we have to remember post-COVID that we need each other.
Of course. So when are we, it doesn't really fit the theme. There's too much drama in that story. I was going to say, when are we going to hear that story? But you can't have a fire break out and go to sleep.
It's an exclusive, Mark. You get this story and this nobody else gets it.
Heard first here on Behind the Human, exclusive. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
What else has got you excited? Like what's coming up? What ideas you're already doing so much, of course, mm-hmm. but I know I can tell with your creative mind that, if what I feel is that there's so much impact that's possible with this kind of work and it, you can tell it lights you up. And I think it's probably a blessing and a curse at the same time because you can only do so much. But what are some things that are lighting you up?
Yeah, it's 90% blessing, I have to say. It's so much fun. You know, we're starting this community app. It'll be live by the time your listeners are hearing this. So we kept thinking, people kept saying, I really wish I could live in this village. It sounds great. And I kept thinking, what if we sort of virtually could hang out? What if there was a corner of the internet that was just really soft, where people valued gentleness, where you could hang out with neighbors? And we have like community projects. And I definitely teach yoga and meditation, but also like journaling. And I'm a graphic artist as well. So I teach like some mindful drawing and stuff like that. And already the response has been so lovely to just see so many people, already like about 1,000 people have joined and we haven't even opened the doors yet, just saying, I'd really like to show up for this. Let's spend time together. We're going to have lives and do crafts and just be goofballs together. And I'm super excited about that. I'm always sort of writing.
What's that called?
Oh, it's called The Village of Nothing Much. And if you just go to nothingmuchhappens.com, you can download and join the village. So I really hope people will come check that out. I feel like so many parts of the internet, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get. You open Instagram and you could see a goat being held by someone laughing and then scroll and see someone get shot. Yeah. And sometimes we just can't take anymore. And I just would like to give people a soft landing where they go, okay, when I go there, it'll be okay.
Yeah, so, you can have an expectation of, I'm going to go here and kind of what people, if you're listening, what visually was happening was like, I can take a breath, right?
Yes.
And
I can let this out. Yeah. So we're super excited about that. You know, we've got some other projects coming up. We've got this really fun project that we're working on right now called The Neighbors of Nothing Much. Nate, who is my business partner, he kept sort of saying what you said, Catherine, how can you write all this stuff? You need a little bit of a break. What could we do to take some of this stuff off your plate? And he came up with this idea. What if we had a season where different folks, some celebrities or people we know from around the world, read your stories and it would give you a little break, which was a great idea. But of course, now I'm so much more involved.
Exactly.
I'm flying out to LA to be in every taping of it.
How could you not, right?
Like, how could I not? Yeah, it's going to be so fun. So we're going to have some really lovely people reading the bedtime stories. Just, you know, one of my goals is just to reach more folks who might need this as a resource. And so maybe you don't know me, but you know this person and you trust them. And when you hear them, you think, oh, this could help me too. So look for that. We're hoping that will come out in November of this year.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Catherine, I mean, thank you so much for what you do. I mean, thanks for coming on the show, of course. But I mean, I think more of a higher thank you for, and everyone can hear and feel it, like just the energy and little piece of the internet that you're living in that is refreshing and safe and healthy and inspiring. Like, we just need more of that. And there's no downside to being in the villages that you're creating and within those characters and experiencing that world, that we just all benefit so much. And the ripple effect of, and I see this in my work as well, the ripple effect of one person listening to one of those stories then just ripples out, because like their minds are in a good place and they're it's just, you know, they're lighter. And as a parent, as a partner, as a friend, a client, a customer, I mean, everyone wins. So
thank you so much, Mark. Yeah. That is so kind. You know, I really feel like I get sort of the better end of the bargain here, but I feel like you probably understand this too. Like, when you get to do something that is truly a useful service for other people, there is really nothing better than that. And you would never give it up. It is the best work you ever get to do. It is so endlessly satisfying that I feel just like, how did I have two dream careers. I got to spend 20 years teaching people yoga. Now I get to do this. I don't know how I lucked into it, but I'm not giving it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you fly
so
out
glad.
To those recordings.
I'm doing it. You can't stop me.
To be continued. I'm sure we'll have many more chats. This was so fun. And thank you again.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mark.